You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, August 30th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District in New York City. And I reiterate, not the metaphorical shadow of the New York Times, where James Rutenberg wrote an entire piece about Paul Ryan's speech last night and forgot to mention that the guy told just the most enormous lies, perhaps in any nomination speech in the history of the country. I don't know. We will talk to our guest today, Kevin Baker, renowned historian, and Jack Hitt, renowned journalist, located in the, I don't know what the name of the center is, in Tampa, housing the Republican National Convention for just one more short, blissful day. The day where Mitt Romney strides upon a stage with his full manhood, but not so manly that you couldn't trust him to walk you home from a dance, say. Though he does listen to bad music. And we'll get up and embrace the warm embrace of the Republican nomination tonight. Also on the program today, Abi Hassan, the Mass Defense Coordinator for the National Lawyers Guild, on what's been happening in terms of protests and all the fine work by the law enforcement agencies and their tanks and their body armor and their long-range audio deflector shield. Who knows what toys they've got? Did they bring out the drones for this convention? There was some talk of it. We will talk more about that later in the program. So last night, basically, the theme, apparently, of the Republican National Convention was, if you are not extremely wealthy and successful or a renowned politician, either you or your parents, or your grandparents, were really lazy. Or not white. That seemed to be the theme. That seemed to be the subtext of what was sort of streaming through the convention. The subtext or the theme for the media last night was either one of two things. It was, one, Paul Ryan has lied to such a degree that we're actually going to have to call him out, in which case we should praise Condi Rice for being able to deliver, which was a decent speech. Of course, seemingly untethered from the entire context in which it allowed her to stand on that stage. And also, one could argue, the entire context for which we're looking at massive financial problems in terms of a debt and deficit to the extent that that's really our number one problem, which I don't think it is, but be that as it may. And so that was basically the theme of the night. Either one, we're going to ignore that Paul Ryan just told some amazingly large lies, or we're going to acknowledge that Paul Ryan told amazingly large lies, and then not even sort of bring up the fact that, hey, wait, that Condi Rice, I remember her. She was from the Bush administration. She's the only person here, perhaps in the entire building, from the Bush administration who was allowed into the building. Maybe we should bring up some of the things that happened under the Bush administration. Nah, that would be rude. Since we know she will never, ever, ever, ever run for elected office in the Republican Party, because last I checked, I think she was pro-choice. Am I right? Okay, so she's gone. Oh, and also there's that other thing. She's African-American. She could actually be, I think, a vice president for them. I think they would allow that. But not a woman. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Jack Hitt and Kevin Baker. Get their take on what took place just last night. All right, we are back on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program the wonderful Kevin Baker and the lovely Jack Hitt.
Oh, I want to be lovely.
Well, you're both lovely and wonderful, to be honest with you. I was trying to remember how I introduced you the other day. So now you are on day three in the belly of the beast. Jack, I want to talk to you a little bit about that piece about the USA thing, but I want to give me a sense of what's been going on. What is what was the highlight last night? The enormous lies of Paul Ryan, or just his soft and supple blue eyes?
Kevin?
Yeah, the lies were almost incessant, and they were really imaginative. I think the one that's attracting the most attention, and deserves to, is the lying about the Janesville plant, which he says that it's an incredibly legalistic, subtle lie. It's right up there with President Clinton saying, depends what your definition of is, in which he says that Obama, which he said last night, that candidate Obama came to Janesville in 2008 and said that he hoped the GM plant could be kept open and that it would be open for another 100 years. And then Ryan sadly reports that it wasn't. It closed soon thereafter. What he doesn't reveal, of course, is that it closed in December of 2008, before Barack Obama even became president. You know, Ryan implying that somehow Obama had broken his promise and claimed it and closed it. An assertion that Scott Walker then upheld later on in a rancorous MSNBC interview afterwards. This just, like, I think this gets into kind of Mary McCarthy territory, where she said that, referring to Lillian Hellman, that everything she says is a lie, including if and but. And, you know, this, here's the case in which you have Ryan not even lying in making out that the word hope equals promise, not to mention a promise that Barack Obama could have done something about before he was president.
Now, I'm surprised you thought that. I mean, well, that was obviously the sort of the most sort of, I guess, I mean, the most obvious and easily, confronted lie. I mean, you could literally just Google, when did this plant close? He wasn't president at the time. And he also, right, I should add, was not a GM official. So he really had no ability whatsoever to do that. But I thought you were going to say, Kevin, and Jack, I want to hear you weigh in on this, that that the biggest lie of the evening was essentially that he just fundamentally, it seemed to me, ran away from every principle. I mean, he ran away from Paul Ryan, it seemed to me. I mean, you know, there was nothing. He was defending protecting Medicare when, in fact, we all know that his Medicare plan would leave seniors with basically a bill for $6,500 in best case scenario to get the insurance that they have now under Medicare. I mean, I thought that was the most sort of, like, he fundamentally, he didn't even make a conservative argument for his own ticket.
You know, Sam, he did what Mitt Romney has done. I mean, in a sense, he's learned at the feet of the master. So the Paul Ryan of the 2000s was the Paul Ryan who, you know, funded both of the wars on a credit card, who funded Bush's, Plan D Medicare benefit, all on deficit spending, voted for TARP, et cetera, and now has to sort of reinvent himself as the Paul Ryan of what we saw last night. So, like, all of that history was not only erased, but even some of it, which was astonishing, like when you said that, you know, Obama walked away from the Bull-Simpson finding. But so did Paul Ryan, who voted against it, right? Or who checked, you know, charges that Obama's cutting $716 billion out of Medicare, you know, an idea that he himself included in his own budget plan. But, you know, to me, actually, what was amazing, the evening was astonishing, but this morning, to me, is even more astonishing, because you cannot find an account of Ryan's speech in today's media, including Fox News, that doesn't go through all of the distortions and hypocrisies in it, right? There's even an item on Fox News' front page about all of Ryan's distortions.
Wow.
You know, the New York Times has one. Gawker has one. The New Republic. The New Yorker has a piece this morning. Everyone. CNN. Last night after the thing, we came back here and flipped through all the channels. That's all anyone was talking about.
Well, not on, not to be fair, CNN, I think, I have the quote from Erin Burnett. Yeah, there were some, I think she said, let's see, wait a second. I have that here. She said, let me just say, Erin Burnett said, there will be issues with some of the facts, but it motivated people.
Right. Well,
motivational lies. I love that.
I actually agree with that. I agree with that, Sam. I was being there. Let me tell you something. Ryan, Condoleezza Rice, and Huckabee all lit up the room. So the performance quality is fantastic. There's no question about that. What they said, that's another matter. But what was interesting to me is that after 5 or so years of certain media critics haranguing the mainstream press for not, you know, announcing what the truth of a certain of verifiable facts are. Did the plant close under Obama? Not. Well, it closed in December of 2008. So, no, not under Obama. So those facts now are being held up, and people are being held to account. It's sort of like, you know, the Todd Akin affair, I think, in some ways, is the Republican leadership, they're all talking to themselves and in this sort of bubble of where they get to sort of generate their own sense of reality. And I guess all of us do this to a certain extent, but I think right now for the Republicans it's particularly toxic because occasionally it leaks out.
I learned from Chris Hayes that that's called a pessimistic closure, I think it is.
What is that?
Am I pronouncing it wrong?
Epistemological closure? Yeah.
Yes.
Sam, I thought it was also
interesting. I think that's what's happening with Todd Akin, is that, you know, he basically said outside the bubble this thing that many of them believe, and all of a sudden it was a what?
What?
You know?
Well, in that same vein, Jack, I thought it was also interesting that we saw the remake of Paul Ryan, Now That You Have to Move Him Out of the Bubble. And that came in a line where he said that his economic mentor was Jack Kemp, the deceased, very relentlessly cheery advocate of Republican policies. You will not get another mention of his real economic mentor, Ayn Rand, the crazy Russian-born promiscuous cult leader, for the rest of the campaign. She's now been banished from the Republican lexicon. And I thought that was kind of an interesting start of the Ryan makeover by the Republican image makers.
Kevin, let me ask you this, and Jack, you can respond to this too. But Kevin, Jack mentioned this, that I literally have in my hand a stack of those stories that he was talking about, reaction to Ryan. The most dishonest convention speech ever. Paul Ryan's breathtakingly dishonest speech. Paul Ryan, here's a list of some of the whoppers that Paul Ryan served up. Ryan's large lies and one big truth. And it goes on and on. Yeah. But now, has there ever been, in your estimation, Kevin, now I know that you haven't been to every single convention in the history of the country, but has there ever been a nominee who came up? And it's one thing to sort of soften the edges of your program, but it seems to me that if you took out those lies, the only thing that you'd have left on that stage was basically sort of a non-ideological, almost liberal progressive, to the extent that there was any ideology there, progressive sort of like general map of where we should head, and again, a couple of blue eyes. And I'm wondering if there's ever been a speech by a nominee, just a nominee now, that was so transparently running from who they were. You know, like Ronald Reagan was a very ideological guy. I wonder if I don't remember his speech, running from who they were and telling such huge, massive, sort of demonstrable lies.
I think lying has really become a way of life for the Republican Party. I really do. All partisanship apart, and I think all, you know, all political parties and all politicians lie at some point or another. But I think they really, really, really have departed from the reality-based community, as they called it. And I think if Democrats can beat them on that this year, we might actually see some positive good come out of this godforsaken election campaign. I think you go back to Reagan. I mean, he's talking about the Cadillac driving welfare moms. You know, just like huge, enormous lies back then. I think.
Here's my point though: is that Ryan's lies were not in service, it seems to me. I mean, I guess you could say like everything's free except for us. Arguably a lie. But it seems to me that Ryan's lies were not in service of a broader conservative ideology. Ryan's lies were in service of actually hiding that in a way that I've never seen a nominee be so afraid of being exposed for who they are in that way. You follow me?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point, and I think that's very much what he's doing. Hence, the hiding Ayn Rand behind the pay no attention to the crazy Russian cult leader behind the screen. But I think this is something that's gone on for a long time. A lot of Reagan's right wing ideology was also hidden that people have forgotten. You know, Ronald Reagan opposed the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act. You opposed pretty much every, and that was the amazing thing. Condoleezza Rice's, frankly, disgraceful speech last night, leaving out the fact, among many other things, that she, the first two Republican presidents she served, Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, were both people who were, before, while in political office and running for office, utterly opposed any of what she now was praising last night as the civil rights agenda. You know, so they had already kind of remade themselves by the time they took office, while still giving dog whistles to the faithful. Hence Reagan appearing at the Philadelphia, Mississippi State Fair there, down at the same place where kicking off his campaign, where the civil rights workers were murdered. You know, the right has been hiding its essential self for a long time. That was the triumph of Ronald Reagan, was he was able to put this smiley face on Barry Goldwater's extremism and march it around. This is just a continuation of this. You know, this is what these image makers have been doing for the last 30 years now, and possibly the mask is starting to slip, which would be a nice thing to see.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, Jack, my theory about last night was that there's three basic audiences of people, three different types, categories of people who are tuning in to last night. They are the Republican base, the mm-hmm. Democratic base, basically the people who are the most engaged in politics. You know, tonight will be, I think, a different story. Yeah. There'll be more people to see Romney. And then the media. And so I think in terms of the Democratic base, I think that, you know, it's harder for the base to get riled up about a guy lying as opposed to a guy who came out there and said, like, you know, we're going to get rid of Medicare once for all. The Republican base, I think that they were obviously excited, but not necessarily on broader conservative themes. Like I say, a lot of those seem to be submerged. And then I think the reason why I think it was a failure for Ryan last night is that the fallout has been that one of Ryan's key constituencies, that being the establishment media, is looking at this guy as like, you know, I think Lord Salatin in Slate apparently has left the Paul Byron, Ryan bus. I heard David Gregory say something like, he seemed to have ideological amnesia, and which I think is a very polite way of saying he lied. And I think that's very problematic for Paul Ryan, because that was one of his assets, no?
Oh, yeah. No, I think, you know, this morning they're facing just really just wall-to-wall headlines that say this speech is full of lies and distortions and hypocrisies and unfinished, you know, unarticulated information. I mean, so, you know, that's the Ryan they're going to have to answer for later today, right? But I will say to the Republican base that saw it last night, I mean, not only did they love this guy, but Kevin and I were talking about this, but, you know, before Ryan got up there, John Thune talked, Portman talked, Pawlenty talked. Thune was fine, but the other two were absolutely awful. And you do realize that whatever choice Romney made there, getting Paul Ryan, who looks like, you know, every grandmother's favorite grandson, up there, was a really smart move. Like I said, I think the performance was fantastic. The problem for them is that the morning papers just filled with corrections from top to bottom. And I have to say, like, this stuff might work when you're standing in front of the Republican base and they love this red meat, these sort of like rewritings of very recent history. But like I said, the media doesn't care for it much or is kind of alarmed by it. But even more so, I think it's when they get into debates, well, you have to turn to Joe Biden, who actually knows what you voted on, right? Or Barack Obama, who knows what you stood for a few years ago, and try to retail this whole thing about you know, the $716 billion Medicare cut, so that you were shuttering the factory that actually closed in December of 2008. It'll be interesting to see how they try to make those claims stand up with someone who can talk back. Right now, it's still pure television, which, you know, red meat to the base. But, you know, at some point, they have to start to answer to other people. And that's going to happen in the debates.
And I think most importantly, I mean, you know, I think even more important than the fact that people can read in the newspaper that Paul Ryan mm-hmm. is lying is that the media is writing it. I mean, because that's how all of this is going to be mediated when we go into the debate, right? I mean, if the media believes that there are lies and is waiting for Joe Biden to say to Paul Ryan, hey, wait a second, buddy, you voted X, Y, and Z. You did this and that. Then I think the media is sort of primed and ready to report that story in a way that we haven't seen in the past. Now, Kevin, I want to go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Jack. I just want to add one last
please.
Thing. I think two things that happened. One is that the media's changed, but the other thing is that I think the whole sense of like what they can get away with, what Republicans feel like they can get away with in terms of these distortions has really shifted really so far into an alternate reality that the media has to respond now. I think only a year ago they might have said, like, well, people have different opinions. But, you know, now they're not just saying things like, oh, you know, all welfare recipients drive Cadillacs, which is kind of an unverifiable thing. But they're actually, like, using dates and times, you know, simple truths that can be easily fact-checked and aren't really matters of opinion or interpretation.
Right.
You know? So they've moved to the back zone, which is a very dangerous place to be. Like I said, that can all be refuted when something closed, what your vote was in 2007, you know. Those things can be checked. And now the media feels like they have to. I mean, everybody now is – I mean, I saw Chuck Todd taking on – was it Terry Branstad or, you know, somebody like that. I mean, just – you know, mainstream media people said, I have to stop you here. I have fact-checked that. That's not true.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen a year ago. It just didn't happen.
I think that's a very good point, yeah. And I think that's going to be the challenge for Biden, who dealt with a very difficult challenge with Palin, somebody who he had to take down without appearing patronizing to. And he did it very well. He's going to have to paint the choir boy, Paul Ryan, as being really Eddie Haskell. As being another type we're familiar with, not the sincere good boy, but the guy who's like, you know, lies to the adults, you know, the choir boy who goes around and like steals from the collection box,
right?
You know, that's, you know, and drinks the sacramental wine, you know, when the priest isn't looking, you know, he's going to have to like try to paint him like that. And Ryan has left himself open to that with things like the Janesville lie and the Medicare lie. He's lying so blatantly, as Jack says, and with such specificity that he could get hammered by that in the but Democrats are going to have to go after him. He's not like Palin. He's a pro. He's very good at what he does, and they're going to have to go at him from moment one and nail the lies to him.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see too if this really does turn into a battle between the Democrats and Ryan. You know, I mean, because Romney, I don't know, you know, what do you say about that guy? You just let him talk essentially and just wait is really all you need to do to deal with Romney. It's going to be interesting to see if going after Ryan is going to sort of make the Democrats take a more definitive position on Medicare and Social Security, but that's a different story. Kevin, let me ask you this, and Jack as well. You guys have been to a lot of these conventions, and we had this conversation in the office, and I've been feeling this, but I'm so biased and jaded and got a chest cold, so I don't know. But is this convention, it seems to me, and I don't know why exactly, it just seems smaller. Like, there's a quality about this that just seems not to have the gravity. And I don't know if it's because we've seen Mitt Romney now for what feels like an eternity running for – I mean, honestly, this guy – I feel like I've been seeing Mitt Romney now. Maybe it was because I'm from Massachusetts and I feel like Mitt Romney's been running forever. It's completely anticlimactic. Maybe because Ryan was picked a couple of weeks ago and we've seen this guy in the House so much. But it just seems, everything seems just sort of smaller. The level of excitement, the drama, the stage, maybe it's the camera angles there. But it just seems smaller. Does it have that feel to you, or is that maybe just something that I'm sort of projecting on this?
Yeah.
Let me just say,
can I just throw in something there? Because I said long ago that the presidency is sort of like this giant sort of machine that we plug this one man into every 4 to 8 years, And that the machine sort of operates according to, like, this guy's kind of personality, right? So the Clinton White House is very chaotic and confused. Obama's White House, whatever your, you know, cliches are about his personality. But it's true also of the convention. That, you know, it all really revolves around the main guy. And the fact is Republicans don't really love Mitt Romney. They never have. They told us all the way through the primary that they don't love him. They kept voting for everybody, including, like, Donald Trump and Herman Cain for a while were leading the pack. You know, they don't like him, really. Deep down, they don't. And I think that's one of the problems for Mitt tonight is that they do love Paul Ryan. That was clear from last night's reaction. And tonight, you're going to have lots of, you know, standing ovations and whatnot. But, the heart of it is not there because Mitt doesn't have that capacity to sort of project all of that energy the way so many, you know, Bush had that, you know. I mean, he could make the room shake, right? Mitt can't do that. If you saw him the other night when he was sitting there kind of oddly not smiling during Chris Christie's speech, it was kind of nerve-wracking to watch him because he was so clearly uncomfortable where he was, you know. He was being outshone by not only his wife but by the governor of New Jersey, right? And tonight he's got to get up there having been outshone by his vice presidential candidate.
At least Ryan mentioned him. You know, Chris Christie was just like, hey, I don't know if he can hear us, but that Mitt Romney, what a douche, huh? Sorry.
it was amazing to see how self-interested Christie's speech was. Yeah, I would say there's notably less enthusiasm than before. And, you know, one group I was watching, particularly with the Texans, who are very easy to watch because they're actually color coordinating for the convention. They actually appear every day like a little pep squad. Really, they wear different color shirts that are all the same. First day they had on like red and blue shirts with white stars. Yesterday they had the kind of like steel blue shirts on. And of course the cowboy hats, the plastic cowboy hats. And, you know, so you can see them very readily. And I don't know if it was just the absence of a Bush on the ticket or what, but yesterday they sat on their hands for most of the speechifying. You know, they got up a little bit for Condi and they got up for Ryan, but they are not at all into this. And they're really like the red meat Republicans. I mean, right. In the 2004 convention, they were just ebullient. They all put on these little Band-Aids with hearts drawn in on them to make fun of John Kerry's Purple Heart. Because, you know, why honor a man who actually served his country as opposed to going AWOL? But in any case, these people are not excited going into the convention.
It'll be interesting to see if they show up today wearing all black.
Yeah. And, you know, not to get too psychological, but I wonder, after watching yesterday, if there isn't some kind of slightly deeper thing, ominous aspect here that's keeping down the enthusiasm, which is, you know, everybody did a lot of heavy lifting last night. Huckabee excused Romney on being a Mormon, et cetera, you know. Ryan lifted him, you know. But, you know, you also had McCain and Condi Rice making what I thought were really ominous speeches about America and the role and how we're not fighting enough wars, America's role in the world, how we're not fighting enough wars. And, you know, as Jack and I have been talking about, basically, you know, these guys don't have ideas. You know, like you were saying about Ryan's speech, there wasn't a whole bunch there. These people really don't have enough time and enough ideas to fill out prime time. And part of that is, you know, say they win this election, they don't have any ideas for a different type of stimulus. You know, they talk about deregulating and they talk about tax cuts, but they know that's not going to turn the economy around. The real economic idea is Mitt Romney insisting that the military be 4% of the GDP, which will make its budget just astronomical. And these other people are talking about war. You know, this is really the Republican Party contemplating invading Iran and possibly other places. Syria gets mentioned a lot as their stimulus package for 2013. And I think it's scary as hell. I think some of that, if only unconsciously, comes across in this convention. This is essentially a war convention.
Interesting. And do you think that there, because there's like this sort of under, I mean, I wonder if, I mean, I wonder what factors, you know, one, we know there's, and this will be a good segue actually to talk about, that dispatch that you wrote the other day, Jack. But I wonder if the sort of presence of the Paulites who don't like that war talk, to their credit. And I wonder if that, and also sort of the, there seems to be some genuine resentment about the seating of the delegates that seems to be undergirding this. And of course, Jack, you witnessed this. First off, tell us about that story. There's a lot of controversy around that story.
Right. And so what happened was, this is Tuesday. I was just off the floor with two other reporters getting a sandwich. So the TV monitor there. And one of the chairmen of one of the committees, who was from Puerto Rico, stood up to speak. She got a few words out of her mouth. You can see the videotape. It's on the website. And there was this huge outburst of USA, USA, directed at her, you know, or seemingly directed at her. So I wrote this up, and the people around me were like, what is going on? Are they yelling that at her? So, and there were a couple of people who took note of this. Right away, though, the context of it is, according to the RNC, who did release a statement, was that the Paulites, the Ron Paul delegates in Maine, had been refused to be seated and were being replaced in a maneuver that the Paulites thought was sort of anti-democratic, right? So they were being removed from the halls and replaced by pro-Romney delegates. So the Paulites had initially started to shout, "Seat Maine now," and then all the non-Paulites screaming over them started shouting USA. So the RNC is saying it's a coincidence that she happened to walk out at the time that this outburst occurred. So I posted that, the RNC statement, on the website. But, you know, and then Fox News had a little item about it, about this awkward moment. But even not long after that, though, this whole conversation about the sort of occasional breakdown of the message moved on, because I guess some Republican attendees had thrown some peanuts at a black camerawoman for CNN.
Yes.
And said, this is how we feed the animals. So they were actually ejected from the auditorium. And then John Kasich said something a little awkward. So there have been, I will say this, though. There have been very few moments when the larger message of this whole campaign, this whole convention, has really broken at all. You know, there's almost no protests. There are very few demonstrations on the floor. The Paulites are the only ones who get any action whatsoever. And they're still, by the way, causing some trouble on the floor, smuggling in signs. You're not even allowed to do that, even though they're delegates to the convention.
Right.
So anyway, so that's where that stands now. The RNC has said that, you know, this was purely a chance meant to shout down the Ron Paulites' claim that this was an anti-democratic maneuver.
Well, Jack, one second. All right, so I know what the RNC has said, but you're sitting there.
This was just voter suppression, not anti-Hispanic hysteria.
All right. Well, that's what the RNC said. You were standing there. You tell me. I mean, because I believe that it's quite possible that that people were chanting USA coincidentally, when as this woman was about to speak, or had just started speaking, and I believe some of them were doing it to drown out the Ron Paulites. I wonder if you had a sense that any of them thought, like, "Oh yeah, USA, what's going on with this Spanish speaker up there?"
Well, let me just say this convention, they do love that chant. It came up last night too. I noticed a couple of times.
USA.
So,
that's their default chant whenever anybody tries to interrupt the message.
Say that again?
That's their default chant whenever anyone tries to interrupt the message, as some demonstrators did last night. They jump into USA.
Okay,
right.
I buy that. I also saw the crowds at the Republican debates booing soldiers who were gay. Booing.
Oh, yeah, no, they may well have. They may well have been yelling USA at the Puerto Rican delegate. But I was just saying that, like, last night, that's what they were doing. They were, when demonstrators dared to demonstrate, they started chanting USA.
All right, fair enough. I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of people who were there because,
sure.
You know, and of whether or not there was a sense that this was all just to silence the Ron Paulites, or if there were a couple of people who just sort of got caught up in what was going on and thought it was for some other reason.
My entire post
really was about the weird optic that created. And because, I mean, you can go look at the video. That's what you see. People shouting USA to a Hispanic lady standing there in silence, right? And Priebus does step up and say, let's show her the respect she deserves, right? So, you know, that moment happened. The explanation of it now.
And
is
who
that
is he talking to?
Yeah.
I mean, you were there. You got to say, who is he talking to?
Well, he gaveled the crowd to silence.
Yeah. But I wonder, obviously there are competing forces in that crowd. Who was it that he felt was not showing her respect? I mean, that was.
It was clearly the USA guys. But, you know, the thing is, like I said, I mean, their explanation of us was that this was just simply voter suppression. We're just suppressing the Paulites. This is not any hysteria.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. You're just removing the elected delegates.
All right, guys. Well, now you're going to the Democratic convention as well. Is that correct?
You betcha.
Yes.
All right. Well, I hope to speak to you next week then, because I'd like to hear your take on what's happening there. I wonder if that's going to be a how uplifting of an affair that will be, or if it'll be. I'm quite curious as to what the sense will be of the. The Democrats, frankly, I wonder if it will be as much of a anti-Romney and Ryan convention as this one seems to be an anti-Obama convention. Because, frankly, I'm not sure if I've heard dramatic proposals from President Obama about the future either. So I guess we'll see.
And that was kind of a scary thing last night about Ryan, was he attacked quite expertly all the weak seams in the Obama campaign, really criticizing the health care plan, criticizing the slowness of the recovery and the slowness of the stimulus, the time wasting. I mean, he did it all from the right wing point of view. He turned it all on its head. But these are all the same criticisms that people on the liberal side also have been making of Obama, and quite legitimately so.
Right.
You know, the big lie is that the healthcare thing is this big liberal idea. It's not. It's a Heritage Foundation idea.
Right.
You know, so Obama's getting hung for the very same, he's getting hung for basically a Republican idea, which is absolutely inane. And, this is going to be tough to refute with this economy in the shape it is.
Yeah, it should be. Go ahead.
Remember also that the $716 billion, quote, cuts for Medicare was the compromise to try to draw. The Republicans actually urged Obama to go for it, make the health care reform pay for itself.
Suckers!
Right? And, exactly. So he does it, and now it's being, tormented for it. So.
All right, but guys.
Anyway, you can count on us to bring the same level of respect and modesty to the Democrats as we have to Republicans.
All right, Jack, one last thing. Who's the surprise guest tonight?
My guess? Everyone is saying it's Clint Eastwood. Could well be. But you know what I think would totally rock the shack if they can pull it off? And this is my guess. I think it's going to be a very aged but still lucid Nancy Reagan.
Ah, okay. And Kevin, who's your guess?
I guess it will be Eastwood, since it's sort of an open secret now. I was hoping it would be kind of John Voight, who we saw yesterday, kind of being led by the shirt cuff through the convention center and making
Kevin,
out
Kevin.
Of it.
What a drag that would be to have John Voight be the special guest. Everybody's like, oh.
I'd love to see a John Voight speech. Maybe Ted Nugent.
John Voight has a little too much Victoria Jackson in him. They're never going to put him on the stage.
Right.
He says ungovernable things.
I was actually going to say, I'm hoping the special guest is Victoria Jackson wearing a Ronald Reagan mask. All right, gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
All right, Jeff.
Talk to you next week.
Harper's blog, by harper's.org is our blog.
Right. Okay, we've got a link to the blog up on our site at majority.fm. It's at harper's.org. We're going to take just a very quick break, and then we're going to come back with Abi Hassan from the National Lawyers Guild. I want to welcome back to our program, to the Majority Report, Abi Hassan. He is the Mass Defense Coordinator for the National Lawyers Guild. Welcome back to the program, Abi.
Thank you.
What does that mean, Mass Defense Coordinator?
Well, so the National Lawyers Guild, one of the things we do as an organization is protest legal support. And so it's something that started in the late 60s, kind of out of the student strikes and student movement, the Mass Defense Program, which is really mostly protest support. But I'm also involved in we're starting a legal support project for Anonymous and hacktivists generally. And also I do a lot of work. I mean, I'm based out of New York, so I work with something called the New York City, out of the New York City National Lawyers Guild chapter called the Muslim Defense Project, where we do trainings and legal support for New York's Muslim community.
And if and people can know the National Lawyers Guild members in protest because they wear a sort of like a neon green hat, essentially, right? A baseball cap?
Yeah, we're out there. We have these neon green hats, highly visible. I'm sure if anyone's gone to Occupy protests, we've been out there. That's been a major project of our chapters over the last year. But yeah, for the last 20, 30 years, we've been at, in a lot of all kinds of, left-leaning protests. We're not the kind of organization that would go out and do legal support for the Ku Klux Klan, but, broadly in the left, we support those legal movements.
And so give me a sense of what you've seen down there. I know that there haven't been huge protests outside of the convention, at the very least in part because of anticipating the storm, but maybe other reasons as well. Are you by a train?
Yeah, there's a train. I'm outside of downtown Tampa, but yeah, so, you see a few things. I mean, if you look at the city itself, walking through downtown, the city is, like, completely on lockdown. There's police in these, like, khaki uniforms everywhere with gas masks, pepper spray guns, shotguns, like, beanbag guns. There's a variety of different styles of cops, but mostly they're wearing these, like, khakis. I think it's most local and regional police. It looks like a city that is under siege or where a terrorist attack has already taken place. There's 8-foot to 10-foot fences everywhere blocking all the buildings in the march corridor that they've created. There's like blast shields or like protective shields about up to 2 stories high on all the buildings.
Blast shields that go 2 stories high, like a big.
No, I mean like all the. I guess they're not blast shields, maybe, but they're covering the windows are all blocked.
Ah, okay.
Like they're all covered with some kind of barricade, some kind of shield to protect, to protect the. I guess from the anarchist window breakers. I'm sure they spent more money protecting the windows than the windows cost themselves.
Right.
But so yeah, that downtown looks like. It's a dead zone. It's completely it's completely empty of actual normal people. I think people were told to take the week off work. So there's no civilians. There's no, like, people who live in Tampa. There's a scattered few and maybe a few delegates every once in a while who are curious. But you're not, I mean, you're not going to see anyone besides police, basically.
Wow, fascinating. And, I mean, give me a sense of, is there a, have they provided a small pen for people to protest? Is there, I mean, I remember in 2004, at least outside of the DNC, I think it was, there was like a gated area where, just like a big pen, where, you know, if we wanted to protest anything, that's where we would go.
Yeah, so they have this, like, march route that's the official march route that is, as I described, kind of surrounded by this this fortress-type scenario. And then there's also a pin that they call a viewing area, which is, as you mentioned, like the free speech zone thing. It is a maze. I was at the what was dubbed the big protest on Monday. There was probably, I would guess, 300 to 500 protesters, at least that many police. But even with that few protesters, the maze-like situation they created was difficult and tense for a while, and was hard. They had everyone going through about a 6-foot-wide corridor from a wide street to this 6-foot-wide corridor that was not a direct route. And I don't know how familiar you are with protests, but like, that's when things get bad, is when people see where they want to go and the police aren't letting them get there for no apparent reason and forcing them through this, like, cage-type situation. And that's exactly what happened. And with less than 500 people, it was, like, it was getting tense, it was getting awkward, people were not happy. And then when we got there, you know, this viewing area, there's all this list of things you're not supposed to have. And they said that they would provide water, you're not supposed to bring bottles with water in them. And then we get there, and they run out of water when there's, like, 300 people. Like, if there had been a lot of people, it would have been not just, like, a First Amendment kind of civil liberties disaster in terms of just forcing people into this pit, but it would have been a healthcare kind of disaster because it was hot, and it would have taken hours to get them through that narrow corridor, and that's when things get bad.
How did they miscalculate so badly? I mean, that seems like an amazing miscalculation. I mean, they were very fortunate, frankly, that there was a possible hurricane, because if you had asked me 2 weeks ago how many protesters, what's the minimum amount of protesters are going to be down there, I wouldn't have said 300 to 500. I would have said probably 5 to 10 times that is the minimum. And that the idea that their whole it sounds like an airport security line, essentially, on a Sunday morning when all the cruises are flying back or whatever it is. The fact that they set that up and couldn't handle 500 people seems to me to be just an enormous miscalculation.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in that situation at JFK, which is a different story. But I don't think it's a miscalculation necessarily. I think it's just the framework of how these things work. Civil liberties, like the right to protest, that very concept is not like a secondary or even like tertiary thought. It's purely an afterthought. It doesn't really factor into the calculation, right? I think the calculation is like the Secret Service wants this perimeter, and they have all these weapons, they have all this money, they got to spend it on something, and so they create the scenario. And you know, the idea of what it means to protest and what it means to be out there and all that stuff is not really, I just don't think it's really part, it's not important for sure.
I'm not even suggesting that they're worried about the First Amendment rights, but it doesn't even seem like they executed their own plan properly. I mean, if you're going to have 5,000 people and you're going to try and funnel them into a 6-foot-wide corridor and tell them they can't bring anything to drink and then run out of water, you're creating a potential flashpoint. I mean, that sounds almost deliberate. I mean, it's almost like you're asking for some type of problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what, you know, maybe they might have rearranged things the night before knowing that there were less people, or,
right.
You know, I don't know what was going on, but I do know that if there had been a lot of people at that particular protest, it would have been a big problem.
Interesting. And so give me a sense of, like, you know, you're describing downtown Tampa as like, you know, a scene from, you know, like The Day After or whatever it is. What is that doing for, like, aren't these conventions sold to these cities as, like, this is going to be a boon for the local economy? Are people going out, you know, are Tampa Bayans or convention goers going to these stores that are all boarded up with these blast shields?
I mean, downtown, you know, no. I mean, I don't think there's that many people going downtown. I mean, there's areas outside of the city. There's shopping districts. There's this kind of bar district where people are out, and, you know, I think that it has been a boon. But the downtown area is just, it's too difficult to get there. They have bridges closed. They have the highways closed. You know, they have snipers on the, what look like snipers on the overpass. So you can't get around downtown. I think downtown is just out of commission, basically, a lot of downtown. And it would be too difficult. And it just highlights the problem with this kind of thing is, you know, they've been pumping this anti-protest or kind of anarchist hysteria for months, and this happens in the prelude to all of these big security
yep.
events. We see the same exact stories. The anarchists are coming. You know, they're gonna break windows. They're gonna do this. They're gonna do that, and it scares people. And people, you know, people leave town. People, you know, and the sad thing is the only thing that can really, the only real palliative to that type of fear is to actually see a protest and be like, oh, it's just mostly just normal people who are not, you know, it's like every day, it's an everyday thing. But when they create these kind of security zones, that interaction doesn't happen, right? Like, it becomes just completely separate. Like, it's a different world. It's a, you know, it's like the gated community effect of protesters, right? Like, they live in the fortress, the delegates, the corporate media, the politicians live in this fortress, and you know, the protesters are out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah,
but that goes with the public too.
I mean, that lead up that you talk about during the in the lead up to the RNC in 2004 in New York City, there was a couple of cops that we used to have on the show, and these guys were being told at that time, like, I mean, these guys were just like, you know, at the breaks of commercial breaks, they're just looking across and go, guys, this is going to be a nightmare. You don't understand what's happening. You don't know what is being coming to this city. They are planning all sorts of, like, horrible things that they're going to do to this city. And we're like, are you sure? And, you know, they're basically doing this also, I think, in some ways, to key up the cops, to get the cops very worried that, like, you know, to get the cops a little trigger happy on some level. Because, I mean, I guess, you know, from their perspective, better safe than sorry. But it just seems like they, you know, this is like the White Walkers are coming. The whole town is going to be taken over. I mean, so give me a sense of, I mean, have there been many arrests? It sounds like just there has not been a real protest movement there. Do you anticipate something different for the DNC or what?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, there has been a protest. There's some people here. There's protesters. There's not as many as expected. There have not been many arrests. We have about, you know, what we do is we run a hotline, and we do this thing called Legal Observers, where we have the green hat people out watching what's going on, trying to make sure that people, we do Know Your Rights trainings to the protesters, but we also send people out there to watch what's going on, and if people get arrested, they can call us in, and we'll kind of track them through jail and try to get them, you know, whatever kind of support, legal support. That system that I've been spending months setting up, and we have our infrastructure down here, we've had about two arrests.
Wow.
So that's about, you know, if you look at their budget, that's about 25 million per arrest that they've spent. But, the local police through federal grants have spent. But, You know, I think that as to your first point about ginning up the police, you know, the police haven't seemed too trigger happy here. I have to say, like, there hasn't been a massive amount of police violence. There's been, you know, a few like incidents here and there, but nothing crazy. You know, where it's really taken off is in the press. I mean, the local press is just, there's way more mayhem in the papers than on the streets. So one of the things, you know, if you look at the local paper in the buildup, there was a few people who were labeled suspected protesters, right? They were arrested. One of them, they found on them a BB gun and a machete, and this is a quote, anti-government T-shirts, right? So the local papers ran this headline, St. Petersburg sees first RNC-related arrest after men found on downtown rooftop with weapons, right? It was some tight, you know, like, traveler type kids who they found with them, like I said, a machete and a BB gun. They arrested these guys. One of them's on $20,000 bond, right? The next day or a few days later, during the kickoff event in St. Petersburg, right? During their big cocktail party or whatever, a guy drove through the fence and they found an actual gun, not a BB gun, a real gun, right? Another guy got drunk and broke and climbed the security perimeter. And they got into the actual security zone where the Republicans were partying, both of these people, right? That was not a security threat because they didn't have anti-government T-shirts. They weren't suspected protesters. The headline the next day, two arrested near Tropicana Field, RNC party, had nothing to do with protests or politics, right? This guy with a real gun, $10,000 bond. So... Wow. This is where it's like the absurdity and the fear mongering has really shown itself in kind of the coverage and the hype machine.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. What now? What were the anti-government shirts? Hands off my Medicare. Oh, we just lost them. Sorry, folks. Bear with me. I can't hear.
Hello?
Hey, sorry.
Sorry,
we just lost you. So what? I was just asking you, what were the anti-government shirts? Hands off my Medicare?
I would love to know. We haven't been able to find out yet, but hopefully we'll figure that out. I definitely want to know what that is.
All right. Well, lastly, so what do you anticipate for the DNC? I suspect there's going to be a lot more activity.
Yeah, I think it's going to be way bigger. I mean, we don't have a hurricane to deal with. You know, it's happening, especially in the wake of Occupy. It's happening in the Bank of America headquarters, right? Like that. I mean, that's where the main speech is going to be at the Bank of America Stadium, which I think they're not calling it that for the purpose of this event. But I don't know. I mean, the thing about what's interesting about Charlotte is the Charlotte ordinance, unlike Tampa. Doesn't have a sunset provision. It's a new part of the legal landscape for Charlotte, and I think they've been way less transparent in Charlotte. The way the law works there is, even though it was passed by the city council, the city manager gets to call an extraordinary event, is what they're calling it, and they've used it a few times already. They use it for May Day, and they use it for the Bank of America shareholders meeting. I've talked to people in Charlotte who say that this is something Bank of America wants to keep Occupy out of Charlotte and on a permanent basis. But so the law doesn't end, and the city manager, who's unelected, who's just a kind of city apparatchik, gets to make these decisions and has control over spending. So we have way less of an idea of what they're spending the money on. Like, you can see in Tampa that a lot of the documents and you can find what they actually are spending the money on. But Charlotte is way less transparent. So
interesting.
It's harder to know what's going to happen. I think that a lot of these things are kind of cultural to the like police departments, right? And what they what they do, like, you know, if the NYPD was patrolling Tampa, there'd be a lot more arrests and a lot more violence, right? So a lot of those things are unknown and unknowable.
And there will be
more protesters.
One final question: you just mentioned sunset. What is that? What is that law? You said the sunset law.
The Tampa special event ordinance that they created for this event that disallows duct tape and all the, you know, squirt guns, not real guns, obviously,
right.
But that disallows all the stuff, that it expires, right? It expires after the RNC. It's not going to be part of Tampa's law forever. But the Charlotte one is permanent. It's like this guy,
So it's sort of like almost like the shock doctrine, as it were, right? We've got this convention, let's pass a law, and then that's the way that we get this law passed. And it's always that way. Interesting.
And it's permanent. And that's what I was saying, that like I have no evidence to support this, but people in Charlotte have told me that this is something that Bank of America, as the, you know, having their headquarters in Charlotte, wants, because they want to be able to, you know, they want to be able to keep protesters at bay whenever, you know, whenever they decide there's an extraordinary event. And it, the precedent of it being used ahead of time on occupied, you know, on Occupy related marches for the Bank of America shareholders meeting gives some credence to that theory.
Fascinating. Abi Hassan, thank you so much for joining us. We will link to the National Lawyers Guild. Good luck and and stay in touch.
Yeah, thanks so much. We're fundraising for this effort, so if you could link to that, it would be awesome.
We definitely will. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Sam.
All right, folks, bye-bye. That is the end of the first half of the program. We're going to move into the better half of the program now. You can become a member, and I wish you would, at majority.fm. Where else can you get this type of coverage? I don't know. I don't know, folks. I don't know. Tomorrow on the program, Cliff Schechter, Andy Kindler. Oh, and tonight, I should say, gosh, wait a second. Tonight, I'm going to be doing live coverage of the speeches starting at around 9-ish. I think we're going to hear from Catherine Harris. It's possible H. John Benjamin, the voice of the Majority Report, and he does some other stuff too, will be joining us, and we will do a live streaming of the Mitt Romney speech and our attendant mocking of him during the speech. It's the only way I can make it through, folks. Alcohol, an intense amount of mocking. That's what has to happen. All right, so join us tonight, and members, of course, will receive the audio of the mocking of the speech. We will make that a bonus episode this week. But if you're not a member, you got to listen live or you ain't going to hear it. You're going to have to sit there and listen to Wolf Blitzer and Aaron Burnett or whomever talk about how Mitt Romney was so moving. Oh, he's such a nice man. He would never molest you if he was taking you home from a dance. That's a good enough reason for me to vote for him for president. You know, he's not one of those dangerous types who you wouldn't want to take your daughter home from a dance. Like, what kind of types of people would you not want your daughter traditionally to go to a dance with? I don't know. I wonder about that. Well, yes, lawyers like Perry Mason, you wouldn't want them taking home your daughter from a dance. Well, we will speculate and conjecture more. Conject. Is that a verb? Become a member today, folks. Majority.fm. You can also support the show in many other ways, not the least of which by going to majority.fm/support the show. If you buy Amazon junk, buy it through our link. If you drink coffee or tea or eat chocolate, justcoffee.coop, fair trade, organic coffee, tea, chocolate. 10% discount code is majority. Get 10% off your order. Buy the Majority Report blend. Get nothing but kudos on that. Of course, we got merch. You want a Majority Report? What do we got? Shirt, mug, available at the store. I hope you give us a good review on iTunes. I hope you donated your account to us. Listen to my cold. If that's not enough to make you join, I don't know what does. I've been sick for 2 weeks. No rest for the weary. I'll be working again tonight and then tomorrow. All right, see you in the better half.